There are no adjectives adequate enough to describe the impact that Myron and Priscilla Graham had on the art scene in San Luis Obispo. But we're going to give it an attempt. Stay tuned.
Issues and Ideas continues now with Ears on Art, a twice-monthly program produced here at the studios of KCBX Public Radio for the California Central Coast. Co-host Stephen DeLuque and I, Krista Hewitt, are here today to pay tribute to Myron and Priscilla Graham. A list of their contributions to this community would be very impressive, but seemed like a rather cut-and-dry way to honor all that they did. So we have gathered a few people for a little bit more personal account that we hope will create a picture of why these two were such an influence on so many in this community. Six of us met at my house to share stories and memories. Here we go.
To our homage to Myron and Priscilla Graham. The two of them were one of the great cornerstones of the art movement in San Luis Obispo County. And we are here to honor Myron's memory and to also honor Priscilla, because she was right there through the thick and the thin. I'm going to pass the microphone around so that everybody can introduce themselves.
I'm Robert Graham. I'm the son of Myron and Priscilla.
I'm Gail Johnson, Johnson Framing.
I'm Kevin O'Connor.
Jim Carl.
Jim, Robert, Gail, Kevin, and the two of us.
So the first question, of course, is, well, except for their son, how did you come to meet Myron and Priscilla?
This is Jim Carl.
1952, probably, beginning of high school, and I was in the art department, and he was the only art store in town at the time. He had a really good discount.
Tell us about the discount. We've heard different stories about that, many of us.
It really depends on how poor you were.
Robert, we'll come back to you. Gail?
I can't remember meeting Myron for the first time, but I know that my mom used to take us in there when I was a child. I grew up in San Luis. In fact, I was born about the same time that Jim entered the picture. And we would go in there and have custom framing done. So I felt really grateful that my family appreciated that. And through the years, I got to really love Myron and eventually ended up in Cal Poly in the architecture department, and he had the stuff I needed for my classes, and so it just a relationship continued, and that's how I met Myron. It just sort of evolved.
Kevin?
The first time I remember Myron in my life, I was a very shy sixth grader who went into that store to buy some art supplies, and here was someone unlike any person I had ever met. And for almost 50 years, I think that's still a fair thing to say. He was unlike any person I ever met in multiple different ways, all of them positive.
And what year was that?
That would have been 1966, I think. A long time ago. Back when I still had hair.
And I first went into the Graham Art Store as a student in 1970 when I started at Cal Poly. Although I was a biological sciences major, I took all of the minor art programs that were offered to me because that's really what I wanted to do. And I always remember his phenomenal graciousness and his ebullience. I mean, there was just this incredible sense of happiness and positive energy that surrounded that store. And it was just a pleasure to go there.
Well, I'm the latecomer here. It wasn't until at least 76, maybe 77. And even though you might think it started with the art world, I believe it started with the Unitarian Fellowship. And from there, went to involvement with KCBX and certainly was told about the art store and certainly went there. But beginnings were a little bit different. I think, Robert, it's okay for you to talk about what it was. When did you start with your dad?
I started in 49, personally. I remember being about 4 or so years old. They had a place in the back. They would have me because I didn't go to preschool yet or anything. And I would get up on the roof, which I wasn't supposed to do, and look across the street to Cincharbury Building. Now that building's not there anymore. It's right next to where Pier 1 used to be, where they're going to do the new Chinatown. And then we moved right next to Museo's. Then we moved right next to where Boo Boo's is with Warren's Paint. Warren's Paint, of course, moved out. And then that was, what, 67, I think, we did the big move. Until October 31st, 1993, we closed up because Jim here decided to retire. And, of course, you can't do business without your main framer.
Was it 93?
Yes, Halloween. Scary.
And, Jim, how did you... I mean, you started by buying art supplies, but how did you become the framer?
That's an interesting one. I started when Myron really needed me. It's one of those jobs I wanted since high school. And at the time, he had this poly student that did the framing, and the poly student inherited a lot of money and just quit on the spot. And at the time, I worked at Copeland Shoes, and Myron came and got me. And we started in the Quonset Hut in the back, and the Quonset Hut used to be Austin's ice cream parlor. Because when we moved, I was going through all of the beams and stuff, and I would find all these fountain glasses and stuff.
Jim, did you have experience, or did you learn on the job?
None.
But you always wanted the job.
I was doing my own framing, which most people did back then.
Right.
There was no mat cutter. The miter box... was by hand with these big things. And I still have all the equipment. And all the mats were cut by hand, the bevel included.
And what year was that?
When I first started, I don't have no idea.
Jeez.
I worked for Myron probably over 32, 33 years. It's a long time. To really enjoy your work. I started in the Quonset Hut, which I don't know if it's still there or not. Did they tear it down?
It's there.
Next door to Museo's.
It's there. And you were upstairs, too, for a while. You had to go upstairs.
No, that was a hotel next door. Oh. The hotel next door they condemned.
Right.
And so Myron moved all of my framing, because we were at the back of Museo's in the framing department, and it was a little bitty hut kind of a thing where all the framing was done. Right. Very, very small. Mm-hmm. And then we moved the framing to the hotel and upstairs. And I had rooms for every kind of molding, because I had the all of the rooms. Then we moved up to the one on Monterey, right, further up the street.
I love the art store. I love the back room. I love the whole thing. And what is it about framing that one just kind of just loves and never wants to not do anything else? Is it because every day is different? All your customers are happy?
We were the only frame shop between Santa Barbara and King City, I think, at the time. We used to get them all over.
Mm-hmm.
And we had a lot of repeat customers continually. Mm-hmm. Yeah. We were behind months. When we closed the store, I found stuff that 1950s, 1945.
Stuff that would get picked up, maybe?
Both.
But Myron did all of the design, didn't he?
No.
Oh, when I was little, I can remember Myron doing the design, and then coming out of his head, he would say a price. My mom would say, okay, and that was that. I mean, there was no...
When I started framing, there was no formula to price framing like there is now.
Okay.
None. We never charged for fitting at all, ever, even up till the last. Myron used to do custom window shades, and I'm sure there's a lot of those around town still.
Yeah.
Fabric-covered window shades.
Okay, so we have those metal words that were outside the shop, Graham's, Warren's, Art and Frames, window shades, and framing. So where did those come from? Whose brainchild was that?
I have no idea. Probably from, I can't think of their names.
Jack Oxberger?
It could have. very easily.
The fish, you know, that's hanging down.
Right. Oh, yes. Yeah.
That could have been where it came from.
Yeah.
Further back, though, I think most of those things were made out of pegboard.
So the image of the art store and your learning basically as you went, am I gathering that, about framing and so forth. What about the general atmosphere in this store?
Well, basically, Myron liked little kids, and people would bring their families and little kids in. He would pick them up on their knee, you know, like it was like a politician in a way, kissing babies. That's where the graham crackers came from, when we had a jar of graham crackers. Of course, Graham's Art Store, graham cracker. Believe me, I've been in kindergarten a long time. I got that name.
So he was entertaining kids?
Yes.
And Kevin?
I think it would be fair to say that all sorts of people went into the store for all sorts of reasons. Mm-hmm. There were people who came for framing. There were people who came for art supplies or paint. But in large part, they would come sometimes just because they needed a dose of Myron. And a few of them would also go to see Priscilla. But there was very much an atmosphere of community in a way that was reminiscent of an old general store, where everybody circulated in and out of the store and stayed in community through that. And he facilitated that incredibly well in some pretty amazing ways, as I think about it. You would not see the same mix of people anywhere else in San Luis Obispo. And it was the coolest thing, because it was the great homogenizer in some ways. People talked to people they would otherwise have never met. And now we don't really, as much as I think about it, I don't know that we have anything quite like that here in San Luis Obispo now.
We used to. It was called Johnson Framing and Gallery.
Well, I don't think...
And the Art Center.
And the Art Center. I don't think there's anything that is better conversation starter or community organizing hub than a small business on a main street. And that's what Myron had. And he was welcoming, and he was generous with his time, and I'm generous with his smile. And I just can remember always being happy there. And I guess that's the message that I'm getting from everybody. And in my way of looking at it, I never saw Myron age. And it might be about the same as Jim saying he never got tired of what he did. It's because every day was different. Every person was special. Every project was unique, whether he was working with a kid who needed a set of paints or a family who was framing a picture. Everything was special, and I think he valued everybody that way.
You're listening to Ears on Art here on KCBX Public Radio for the California Central Coast. Our program today is our memorial tribute to Myron and Priscilla Graham. Our guests are Kevin O'Connor and Gail Johnson, whom you've just been hearing, the Graham's son, Robert, and Jim Carl, who for several decades was the framer at Graham's Art Store. We continue now with more memories of the influence of these two remarkable people. Here is Stephen DeLuque.
When I first went into Graham's Art Store, I, believe it or not, when I was in college, I was incredibly introverted and shy. And I know a lot of people find that difficulty now. But it was one of those places that you would walk in and he would make you feel like you were the center of the universe. And it never failed that you became this important person and your wants and needs were incredibly important to him. And as Kevin said, you would meet the most amazing group of people that you would never, ever have the opportunity to meet anywhere else in the city of San Luis Obispo. And it was such a great, we now use the term networking, and I don't think he intended it that way. It was simply introduction. I have never forgotten that. It's because I met some of my very, very longest learned friends from being at Graham's.
I think most of us could say that, if not all of us, that people that we met there played important roles in our life, and many of them still do. Mm-hmm. And the fact that Myron, even in retirement, was so active in so many ways, meant that you kept meeting people. He would make sure of that. If you saw him when he was out, the odds were very good. You would be introduced to someone you hadn't met before, or at least asked if you knew the person with him.
I would love running into him at Art After Dark. And the first thing he would say was like, "Have you met so-and-so?" And it was this continual introduction process with him, you know, trying to get the arts community integrated and to know each other and to support each other. And that was such a huge part of my early education in the arts community in San Luis Obispo.
Kevin, are you a native of this area?
No. We moved here when I was 10 years old because my father brought the family here so that he would teach at Cal Poly.
Okay. And Gail is native, and obviously Robert was born here.
Paso.
Well, that's close enough. Okay, so Jim's from Paso. We didn't think of it that way when we were pulling the four of you together. If you weren't born here, you certainly feel as though this has been hometown for a long, long time. The way you're describing the store, that there's a lot of that sense of this is about home.
Gail made the point that it was a small business, but I think it was more special than that because there were many small businesses downtown. But I can't think of another one where you walked in and you were welcomed the way that Stephen described, that you were encouraged. Nobody realized it. I think everyone thought of Myron as their own personal cheerleader. And yet Myron was cheering on the whole town, individual by individual, as well as translating that into helping the town become something better than at the time it had the vision to dream for itself, which has to be one of the best parts of his legacy. Mm-hmm. Not only the individual empowerment, but the wonderful things that happened in the downtown because of his involvement.
And Robert, where was your mother during these kind of formative years of the store? And
Well, my mom was basically, you might call her the first feminist in San Luis Obispo. A lot of people don't realize this, but women were expected to be housewives, take care of the business, which she certainly was the business arm of Myron's friendliness, you know. Otherwise, he would have given away the store. We would have not been...
And he tried.
I would have been able to go to college or whatever. Yeah. But she, you know, read her Betty Friedan and all that, and she wanted to work away from being the bookkeeper and managing Myron's finances, and she wanted to go into library science and become a librarian. And she did start work at Cal Poly, and she went to San Jose and came back down to San Luis during the weekend. So I've learned to be the gourmet cook for my dad, and that's how I got to probably learn how to basics of taking care of a parent, which came in handily a lot later. Priscilla was really the backbone of this family. She was our party planner, our trip planner, our vacations, who we were going to visit, who we were going to see, who we became friends for. We had neighbors. Lane Badgley was our neighbor. And later on, Joanne Ruggles moved in the same place. And they were very close. We would travel with these artists in Pismo Beach, who became Howard Bradford and Dorothy Bowman, very famous serigraphists, Big Sur in Monterey, in Carmel. We met Phil Paradise, Cambria. That's how we got to know Arnie Nye back, actually. In the Greystone Manor days. Phil Dyke and Phil Paradise, of course, are very famous for doing backgrounds for Disney. You watch Snow White and Pinocchio. You'll see their names in the credits. This was very exciting because I was taking along and I thought, oh, they did Disney films? So that's great. I love these artists. So it was all in the Greystone Manor was like, to me, a big medieval castle for a little child. That's pretty good. Anyway, Priscilla was pretty much the social, party central for San Luis. We would have house parties. She was the hostess. We had architects. We had politicians. We had artists, musicians, visiting musicians for the Mozart Festival, staying over. We had foreign students in our little extra room off the side of the house. So we had international. It was pretty exciting.
I think that one thing that, that strikes me and struck me several times about Priscilla is she was doing all of this, but she did it with an incredible air of grace and elegance. You wouldn't know this if you just went in the store, because if you saw her, she was in the back room and she was usually pretty quiet unless you started to know her and then you could talk to her. But when she was out of the store, the inner Priscilla emerged. And here was this incredibly literate, incredibly well-read woman who was clearly very thoughtful, who had opinions about many things that were well-reasoned and well-considered. And it was a treat to talk to her. She was one of the best conversationalists that I ever met. And right up to the time that she died, that would be a fair thing to say. Mm-hmm.
It was interesting for me because I actually got to know Priscilla better through, of all things, the turkey deliveries that we used to do every Thanksgiving, because I worked at a free-range turkey ranch in my early college years. And we developed this huge following of people who ordered these free-range turkeys every year. And for years, I was bringing between 100 and 150 turkeys back from this turkey ranch and delivering them to the people in San Luis Obispo. It was astounding to me because that's how I really got to know Priscilla, because she became one of my turkey people. And I knew, had, of course, known Myron for years. But the beauty of this relationship was is that I realized what an incredible dynamo she was. I mean, it was phenomenal to me because I had always thought of her as Myron's wife. And she was so much more than that. I mean, she was her own person. She had the most amazing, as you said, reasoned philosophies about many things in life. And it was a joy to talk to her because I could never just simply drive up to the home, drop the turkey off, and drive off. It was a two-hour stay. That's how I got to know Priscilla, was actually through turkeys.
And she was also very active in League of Women Voters. So that became part of the social outreach. Obviously, your father, Robert, did a lot of work by being on the city council and other service organizations. But mostly for your mom, it was League of Women Voters in terms of that type of volunteer activity.
Yes, but she also did for a senior project, I believe, Preserving the Morals, the Seven Sisters, and she investigated the Spanish names, how the Peaks got their names, who owned the lands around them. These are very important now as we are trying to preserve these peaks and open them up for open space, hiking, working out with the ranchers and landowners. Very important background stuff. She loved that. History was her cup of tea. She would send me around, you know, taking pictures of some of the old houses to preserve that. She worked on the Cultural Preservation Committee, too, in the city of San Luis Obispo. And, a lot of the old houses still being around, why they haven't been demolished, or might have a little bit to do with her.
Jim, when you were at the store and working all the time, I'm assuming that from what I hear, Priscilla was there quite a bit. So you got to know her or didn't?
Yeah.
I can add to that. I think Jim and Priscilla did get along because Priscilla, when she was a teenager, after high school and college, her wealthier aunt sent all the relatives out over to Europe or something. She decided to go take a freighter to Hawaii, Tokyo, and China. Now, this is like 1936. So this love of the Orient and the fashion and the art, I mean, she had fans, she had this big wall hanging of a kimono and stuff. And Jim is also a very good collector of Japanese and Chinese and Asian artifacts and art and gardens. And I think that's one of the things that is a commonality.
picture just keeps getting bigger and bigger.
I go to Santa Maria usually once a week to get away from the fog in Morro Bay. And there still is a bookstore down there in the mall that is a dollar bookstore, hardcover, soft covers, whatever. And I used to go through all of the novels, especially the nonfiction, and bring a whole slew of them back to Priscilla. And she would go through them, oh, no, 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 pick through them, but then she read a lot of them, so.
One of the privileges, I think, of knowing them was that when you went to their home, in a sense, you were going to a gallery mm-hmm. or a museum. It was this very eclectic set of objects and artifacts, many of them, but not all, by local artists. And it was incredibly good for the soul to go in there and see work by artists you knew and then be exposed to artists whose work you didn't know. And you'd ask a question and one or the other of them would start telling you all about this person. They didn't have things in their house that they didn't know about. And all of it in exquisite good taste.
Mm-hmm. Was this the Los Osos home or the one in San Luis?
Well, there were two in San Luis,
yeah.
The one on Hathaway.
Yeah.
And the first time I went there, it was for a party, and I had never been in a house that had, it seemed to me, like a couple hundred candles lit for this evening party. And I thought, well, if we don't burn down, it's going to be a great atmosphere.
And if it burns down, it will still be a great atmosphere.
No, the concept of living with good art in your home was something they did everywhere they were. Mm-hmm. There wasn't one house that stood out.
Next week, Chris and I will continue with our guests, Jim Carl, Robert Graham, Gail Johnson, and Kevin O'Connor, and the two of us, in our dedication to the wondrous contributions of Myron and Priscilla Graham.
Certainly the most fitting way to honor Myron and Priscilla at this stage is to invite you to an exhibit at the San Luis Museum of Art on Broad Street, and tonight to go to a lecture that's in conjunction with this exhibit. So, first, the exhibit is entitled Wood and Weaving, Santa Ynez Woodworking Guild, and Mary Zickafoos, who is a weaving and tapestry artist with an international reputation. This show runs through the 30th of December, and there is a reception for the artists on December 9th from 3 until 5. The museum is open daily from 11 to 5. Tonight at 7 o'clock, at the Monday Club on Monterey Street, is a lecture by artist woodworker John Cedarquist. John is a nationally recognized furniture creator, and his pieces certainly do not fit the mold of what he calls fine woodworking. They are wonderful pieces, but there is a lot of humor and a lot of just interesting juxtaposition to his work. This lecture is sponsored by Arts Obispo. Tickets may be purchased at the door. There'll be wine and refreshments, and I think a really good time will be had by all. Tonight, 7 o'clock, Monday Club.
You have been listening to the Ears on Art section of Issues and Ideas. Co-host Krista Hewitt and I would like to thank you very much, and we believe Myron and Priscilla would be at that lecture tonight. See you next week.